So, remember how we thought Marco Bezzecchi was going to win this world championship a month ago? About that. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Yeah. That kill shot call after Mugello is looking shaky.
Welcome back to episode 669 of Massimo Rivola's Home for Troubled Italians. I'm your friendly host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And, oh boy, the Dutch Grand Prix, formerly the Assen TT, was a wild one, so to speak. I talked about it on the Crash MotoGP pod, the last one I ever did with them. I don't know if it's even up at this point. I sent them the video link to it, so hopefully it is by now. I mentioned during that episode, it's amazing that we get a different championship flashpoint pretty much every round so far this season. The title battle has taken another intriguing sort of twist or turn pretty much every round so far this season. And this one was no different. And, Cam, what are you doing over there?
Holy shit. Second wind.
He's talking about the fact that we have a brand new Grand Prix winner. And
Pedro Acosta again.
Pedro,
what does he got to do?
You know what Pedro Acosta is doing right now, besides recovering from surgery? And we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Fucking, he's in one of those hazard rooms where you just smash shit up in a mask. And because I think we've now got 17 Grand Prix winners on the grid, and he's not one of them.
He's in a doom loop, man.
How, of all people, has Pedro Acosta not got a Grand Prix win, and Ayagura has? Who would have thought that a year ago? Who would have thought that 6 months ago? Who would have thought that 3 months ago?
You could maybe call it a surprise.
I guess this is the last time we can legally call it an Ayagura surprise, because it really was. Ayagura, Japan's first Grand Prix winner in 22 years. We'll talk about that later. A historic win at the Assen TT for not only Ayagura, but for Japan as a country. This means a lot, for reasons we'll get into shortly. But, why not? Ayagura is a world championship contender, given he's now only 25 points off the championship lead. He's within a race of now new world championship leader, Jorge Martin, who was on the Grand Prix podium as well. We'll talk a little bit about that, about how Ducati were basically in their own separate race this weekend because Aprilia absolutely destroyed them at Assen over the course of the weekend. Some more silly season news confirmed, and we have to give a shout out to what could be the greatest Moto2 race of all time. It's
however lofty you think that statement is, yeah, we mean it.
Yeah, this was a genuine, are you fucking kidding me, out of 10 Moto2 race. Incredible. We'll talk about that a little bit later on here on the show. I'm Dre Harrison, of course. He's Cameron Buckley. RJ will be back next week, of course. But places you can find us in the meantime, youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter at motorsport_101. If you follow us personally on Twitter, you can at DreHarrison101 and at CBuckley917. Are you saving something back there, Cam? Because you look like you're about to explode.
Well, I was going to say as well, RJ in his recovery and returning from Watkins Glen actually missed the Ayagura surprise, which him as the Japanese motorsport nut out of all of us.
Oh,
maybe he should, because Ayagura might just win a championship out of it. Maybe.
He's certainly in the picture. You can follow RJ at RJ O'Connell and RJ O'Connell at bluesky.social if you're that way inclined. We're on Instagram at motorsport101pod. We're on TikTok at m101_podcast. Our website, motorsport101.com. And of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason and Rory are doing so right now. Yes, that's Rory Talks Motorsport for those who are uninclined. Follow him on Instagram so he doesn't get to go to Petit Le Mans, and whatever you do, don't follow Earl Bamber. That's an official statement from you, my friend and yours, Dre Harrison.
Yeah, if most you follow Earl Bamber, you might get punted into the wall at the top of the hill at Watkins Glen.
thanks, Dre, says Rory in the chat. You're welcome. That's a Dre Harrison guarantee.
We're going to tackle him at Petit Le Mans later this year.
Listen, I gave Rory a free plug on the show. Why would this ever be considered a bad thing? Who knows? It wouldn't be like Rory gets a holiday out of it or anything. No, never. Follow Earl Bamber. You heard it here first. All that and more, of course, on our website, motorsport101.com. And we will be back very shortly after this to review the Aston TT. Are you bored of MotoGP flashpoints yet in the championship race? Because we're not. Aprilia dominated Aston for raw pace, achieving their first ever total lockout at a 1-2-3-4 in qualifying as a manufacturer, with Jorge Martin taking his first pole position in the black and purple. But in the sprint, he was outgunned by Trackhouse's Raul Fernandez, taking his second sprint win of the year ahead of teammate Iagura and Ducati's Fabio Di Giantonio. I like to call him Bastard Trackhouse because his bike is pretty much the exact same color scheme, only it's not a Trackhouse, it's a Ducati. So my new name for him is Bastard Trackhouse. The race was a different bit of drama, though. Marco Bezzecchi, after dropping to fifth off the opening lap of the race to Marc Marquez off the start, has a huge crash at Ramshuk, over 125 miles an hour. He rolls and skids across gravel, tarmac, and grass. He ends up right next to the wall near pit entry. Thankfully, he was okay, only just in a lot of pain, a lot of ache and pain, but thankfully no major injuries or anything along those lines. But that crash genuinely knocked him out cold for a minute. That was a huge accident. Thankfully, he was fine in the end, but his championship lead certainly wasn't. Jorge Martin led the first lap of the race, only for Iagura's second win to kick in once again. He swept up Fernandez and Martin and, well, comfortably won the race by a couple of seconds by the time it was all said and done. It marks Japan's first MotoGP race winner since Makoto Tamada at the Japanese Grand Prix in 2004. And with
Camel
it...
bike.
Yeah, the Camel Honda, with it placing him just 25 points outside of the championship lead, which is now held by Jorge Martin. As for Marc Marquez, he could only manage seventh in the Grand Prix after riding in safe mode and facing a final lap track limits breach by rolling on the green. But despite that, he still is just 40 points off the championship lead. He didn't actually lose any ground over the course of this weekend. As a net result. So, I love that there's a last bit that you've put in the notes here, Cam. Funky town at last for Trackhouse Racing, who had a 1-2 in the sprint and the Grand Prix. First time I think that's ever happened since we've had the sprint format where a team has done the double 1-2.
Double 1-2, and Shane Van Gisbergen did exactly what Shane Van Gisbergen does over in NASCAR on a road course. And actually didn't win by very much, but did win.
Yeah, this... Chase Briscoe gave him a genuinely good fight. Fair play to him.
And Connor Zelich got a top 10. Release from Torture City.
Funky town at last. Finally.
Back on topic. Yeah, Trackhouse just lit everybody up this weekend. They were just straight up quicker than the factory Aprilias. Pretty much at every stage bar qualifying. This is really what this is more of what we were expecting when we saw Aprilia start to come up the grid, and the factory very much left Trackhouse behind in their ascendancy last year. They did not have a particularly great 2025 for most of that season.
Only at the end, really, Phillip when Island. Fernandez won at Phillip Island and he nearly ran best for the win at Valencia. It was only really the last two or three rounds that Trackhouse looked like they could genuinely start winning races.
But like they have looked Fernandez still has to work on the consistency because he is a tremendous front runner and, well, not much else sometimes. But Iagura has been reeling off top fives and a podium last time out behind Mark. All he had to do was figure out how to qualify.
We've talked about this. We talked about it after Brno that I noticed as far back as Jerez this season that on lap times, Agüero consistently in the back maybe 10 laps or so is the fastest man in MotoGP. Austin was probably the most obvious example of what Agüero can do, where at worst, he probably finishes on the podium if he was allowed to be able to finish the entire race, because we all know his engine failed that day. But we've seen a consistent pattern. A referee comes back and passes Fernandez on the final lap. We saw it at Le Mans, where it was within a second of the win at the end of that race, reading the two factory Aprilias at the end of that race. And now his last four races, he's gone fourth, second, and now the win, his first win. And I love that he was asked in the post-race presser, you know, when was the last time he felt that close to a win? And Agüero, because he's very deadpan, bless his heart, went straight to the camera and said, last weekend. Bless him.
He didn't have to wait for Mark to give him one. He was able to take one all on his own.
Bless him. Agüero is the most introverted man on the MotoGP grid. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. He looks like the sort of guy that is deeply uncomfortable with the idea of public ceremonies. I can't just take this trophy and go back indoors and celebrate with my boys. No, you spray that champagne, little shit. Okay, fine. That's him. But my God, his pace in the back half of these races is insane.
I lay second wind on the battlefield. Second wind is real with this dude. He was stupid fast in the second half of the race. But he got around Fernandez and just took off. Fernandez is usually the definitional front runner. If he can get to the front, there's nothing anyone can do about him. But Gurra passed him like he blew his engine.
He's got three temps on anybody in the sport in favorable circumstances on worn tires. He's unbelievable on used rubber. Even the other Aprilias like Raul and Jorge Martin, I think they had their post-race debriefs afterwards, and they were openly saying he's doing shit on the data that we don't understand. It's very Marquez-esque as to how he makes his lap time. For those who don't know, we've talked about this before with Marquez, where he typically will hold back a little bit in the opening, maybe third or so of the race, because he's afraid of overloading his front tire because of how much rear grip the Ducati generates. He waits for the rear grip to go down a little bit, so it's starting to slide a little bit, and then that gives Mark the confidence to be able to push and generate his lap time. Agüero is apparently quite similar in how he generates his lap time the same way. The weakness is, if you punch him in the nose early on, he does fall down the field a little bit, and sometimes he gives himself too much work to do. But he's gotten the qualifying down. It's Happy Gilmore learning how to putt. This is the issue. It's like, Happy learned how to putt. Uh-oh. And that's what this is now. We're now seeing the evolution of Iagura in real time. And we said it before on this show, Cam. This boy is nice. This boy is a talent. And we're now seeing this talent come into fruition. And why not? Why can't Agüero win this world championship the way the Aprilia is right now?
Needs a bigger sample size. This is one of those weekends where Mark was not at the front of the grid because the arm just isn't there yet around this type of track. And even if it was, the best that Mark was ever going to be this weekend was probably best Ducati in ideal health, and he's not. No. And he wasn't. But the biggest thing for Aprilia in a embarrassment of riches sort of way is that now they're all taking points off of one another.
This is a problem.
He's taking points off Martin, who's taking points off Raul, who isn't taking points off Marco Bezzecchi because he's taking them all off himself. More on that in a bit. But if he can do more of this, there's no reason why he can't.
It's a formula where if a pretty are going to go dominate a race weekend, which they will, because there's a fair few tracks like Assen on the calendar, because this is where Aprilia make their bread and butter. Changes of direction and high-speed cornering. This is where Aprilia are completely unmatched, because their front-end grip is insane. They can turn quickly, they can turn well, they don't burn their tires up. This is the sort of track where Aprilia rubs its hands like Birdman, because it's high downforce. And that cornering speed, Aprilia are unmatched. They are they were regularly 2 to 3 tenths faster than the field in the final sector, which is basically the run to Ramschick and the final chicane, basically.
Yeah, it's all just high lean angle, high cornering speed, tip the bike in and see if it sticks. And it would. It stuck pretty much every time. Most of the time. We're going to get tracks that favor one bike or the other. The stuff like the X factors are going to come into play. Iagura has a genuine X factor that really no one else has right now. The only other person who's really like this is Enea Bastianini, and he's stuck on a KTM right now.
Yeah, and even he's touches of it.
Yeah, like Enea, he reminds me of like Enea Bastianini, but with more raw speed.
Yes.
Because that's the problem with Bastianini, is that he's only the best MotoGP rider in the world for the last 8 laps of a Grand Prix.
Yeah. Final third.
He's
a bit more refined. He's more refined, and he's quicker over a single lap. And like I said,
now he is.
Well, if this holds, Agüero might be championship favorite in 3 or 4 rounds time. There's every possibility. Like,
need the sample size out of it.
I need to see 2 or 3 more like this. Like, if he can get 2 or 3 more like this, he's going to be a problem. There's no doubt about it. Like, as I mentioned before, this is now Mark season coming up. We've got the Saxon Ring in a week and a half's time. We've got summer break after that. We take 4 weeks off. After that, Silverstone. Aprilia should go well at Silverstone by paper. Like, Bez won last year. The Yamaha's not going to be what they were here last year. So you would probably put Aprilia as favourites for Silverstone, given how much Ducati did not work at Silverstone last year. They chewed its tires up and they were off the boil.
They couldn't get the tires going. It was the opposite issue.
No fear.
Maybe there is a possibility that what they've done to the Ducati this year actually helps them proportionally a bit more in Silverstone. We're going to have to wait and see.
And then it's Aragon, which is a Mark season. It's an anti-clockwise track. The Ducati goes well there. It's anti-clockwise. Mark's won more than half the races he's ever entered that are anti-clockwise. Like,
and Mark, that 4-week gap is only going to benefit Mark.
Yeah, Mark should be going into that thinking, I should be taking 2 out of 3. At least.
Yep.
You know, so I would pump the brakes a little bit on an Agüero title campaign, but only a smidge. The pace is there on Agüero now where he can win Grand Prix outright. And if he can do that, there's no reason why he can't be a contender.
He's got to do it now because he's going to Yamaha next year.
Yeah, more on that in a little bit. But yeah, like this might be Agüero's only chance at the world title for at least another 2 years. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Bez. Oh, boy.
You know, we ask a question quite often on this show.
Why not Bez?
Why not Bez?
This is why not Bez. This was, I mean, it was a classic Bez weekend in the sense of the sprint, he left some performance on the table because he got caught early on. He fell down the field a little bit, and by the time he was able to get going, it was kind of too late. He wasn't able to make any inroads on that big 3 on the podium this year, but was just got too far in front. Better than last week. That's an improvement at least.
Mm.
And then, I mean, Aprilia didn't even try to defend Bez on this one. They openly said, well, we just think he went too quick, basically, through Ramshuk. And it's hard to go too quick through Ramshuk. That's a 130-mile-an-hour corner. One of the fastest corners in MotoGP, period.
That's just it. There are a few worse places to crash a motorcycle in racing than Ramshuk. And
horrible crash. Horrible. Our Discord
it's another. It's very classic Bez of the last year or so, isn't it?
Just too hot.
It's not just that. It's that he got a kind of a bad start, and instead of using the bike underneath him that we know can pace through a Grand Prix, he just went hell for leather for it and crashed.
The thing is, right? If he settled, even after Marquez passed him, and I think that's part of the reason why this happened. I think Bez panicked when he saw Marquez in front of him. And the way bike racing works nowadays, when you get past, you try and immediately counter before you get hit with the dirty air and the tire pressure that starts rolling up. Like, you try to hit them back as soon as possible. That's typically how it goes now. This is just a theory, because look, I'm not a psychologist. I think Bez panicked when Mark passed him on that opening lap. And I think in his haste to try and get back in front of Mark, which he would have done anyway because the Aprilias were so much quicker. Worst case scenario, Bez finishes fourth. And that's not a dreadful day. He still keeps his championship lead.
Okay. Still pulls points away on Mark. He's got to do at some point.
It's points on Mark. It's probably like 7 or 8 points on Mark, but depends on where he finishes, right? Instead, he's tucked the front Ramshuk, had a huge wreck. Thankfully, he's okay, because I don't wish injury on anybody. But it's another DNF. It's his third non-score in a Grand Prix in a row. And as Jason points out in our chat, he's only scored 13 points the last 3 weekends, all in the sprints. He's not scored a Grand Prix point since that Mugello victory.
I mean, his championship lead is gone. Martin is leading him.
By 7 points.
Yeah, Martin has no reason to play team orders. We've discussed it at length. Ayagura has no reason to play team orders. We just discussed it like 4 minutes ago.
Yeah.
It's just stupid, isn't it? It's very frustrating because you look at the glittering rider that he was at the start of the season and just the notion of leading the world championship has come crashing down on him in about 3 weekends.
I do think it's that. I mean, again, it's hard to say for sure because we don't truly know these people, but it's hard not to look at the last 3 race weekends, because I mean, Barrington was ultimately not his fault, obviously.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate. He went to Brno, the first serious race he'd done since Barrington. I wonder if he was thinking, shit, I've got to get back up there and get into play, because Bagnaia was at the front. Mark was in range of a possible sprint win. Bez crashes there, smacks the marshal, as we all saw. Got banned from that Grand Prix, lost 25 points to Marquez there. Worst case scenario, Marquez has taken 32 points out of Bez that weekend. He took 30 out of him in Balaton with the way the math shook out. And again, now during the Brno Grand Prix, where the points, or the Aston TT, where the points now matter most, he's just seen Marquez pass him on the opening lap. I wonder if mentally that was him panicking and that's now led to a mistake, which has now cost him dearly. Because as mentioned, if you're Mark Marquez, you broke even this weekend. That's huge.
I think you did better. Because like Jorge Martin is a different rider weekend to weekend. You still made points on the person who's been the most in-form Aprilia rider.
Yeah, like, there's no getting around it. Bez has won 4 Grand Prix this season. Martin has won 1. He won at Le Mans. Yep. It was a perfect weekend. That's it.
And wildly inconsistent otherwise.
He's
really good sometimes, maybe shit.
Yeah, he's good for a podium here and there, but he's got one Grand Prix win to his year. Mark has two, which kind of says it all, given that Mark has been in less actual races this season, and he's still been as prolific a sprint winner this year, because Mark has two sprint wins as well, and two Grand Prix wins this year, despite arguably being on a worse bike. It's, if Bez is the threat, it's only 33 points now. He gained another six on Bez over the course of this weekend. So right now, if you're Bez, you've got to be thinking, well, shit, now I've lost my championship lead. Martin's now in front of you. He hasn't had very many dreadful days, and maybe only one or two. Otherwise, he keeps the scoreboard rolling over. Fabio Di Giantonio is still the top Ducati in this championship. He's only 16 points away, because he will just keep racking up thirds and fourths. Fun fact, 7 times out of 10 this season, Digi has finished third or fourth in a Grand Prix this year. Tick over. Keeps the scoreboard rolling. Again, doesn't have very many bad days. Hard to punish him, in other words. And now Agüero's gone fourth, fourth, second, and first in the last four rounds. Only person that... He's now the leading scorer in the championship the last five rounds, because Pecco Bagnaia was, and he didn't finish this race due to another brake failure. So Bez has to be looking at the scoreboard and shitting himself, because he's getting threats from all angles now, from his own team, the other Aprilia team, and the factory Ducati team. He's in trouble. He's in big trouble now.
He made a lot of hay while the sun shone, and now these last four weekends have been just complete implosion. Some of it his fault, some of it not, but ultimately, if we're going to talk about winning your title on your worst days, Bez's worst days have been pretty fucking terrible this year.
Yeah, he's been... I mean, that Mugello win, the fourth win of his season, now feels like a long time ago, even though it was only a month.
Feels like a different year.
All of a sudden, Bez looks vulnerable. I'm not sure if Martin's got a full campaign in him yet, because he's been so inconsistent on that Aprilia. Agüero's sample size is brief. Hell, I would go as far as to say anybody in the top eight still has a half chance of winning this title. And I said, look at the scoreboard now. Pecco Bagnaia is in eighth. He's 63 points away. He was the best scorer in this championship going into Assen in the last four weekends.
Yeah, he should be closer, because on pace, again, he was having a unspectacular but solid weekend.
Was probably fourth on paper. Fifth at worst.
Probably best Ducati if he's able to finish that race.
Yeah, he had a good weekend.
Yeah. And that's all Pecco has to do, ultimately. If you could be the best of the Ducati set, at some point you're going to start racking up wins and sprint wins.
Definitely.
It really doesn't feel like Bez and Aprilia reeled off just a crushing dominant run to start the year, does it? Because the points have collapsed in such a way that...
And quickly,
it's been a month. It's been a month since we felt like this championship was kill shot.
Yeah. We weren't exaggerating. It felt like it was over when they won a Mugello, because that was, Bez had a 102 point lead on Marquez at that point. That was like, it felt like it was over, essentially.
Marquez never goes down in the fourth. Mm. Doing too much thinking, Dre. It's unfitting of a championship contender on current form.
Yes.
Now he has a lot of time to fix that, but
still have 12 weekends to go.
You can't keep dropping points like this. You can't. You've bled 3/4 of your championship lead at this point. We're going into Mark season. We're about to get a four week gap that is only going to help Mark with the health. It's only going to help Martin, because Martin is banged up from a couple of his crashes too.
Yeah.
If it's going to be Bez, he needs to be better. And he needs to be better quickly.
You've got, like I mentioned, you've got Germany, Silverstone, Aragon, San Marino, Red Bull Ring. It's that September 20th that closes out the European chunk of the calendar until we get back to Portimao at the end of the year.
Ducati loves a good Red Bull Ring.
They love the Red Bull Ring. They won there last year with Marquez, and Marquez won a close one over Bez at Misano last year.
Ducati were winning at Red Bull Ring when they weren't winning much of all.
Yeah, 2016. When we first came back was when he only broke that nearly six-year duck of Ducati Grand Prix victories. It feels like a millennium ago now at this point. But like I said, the top eight in the standings right now are covered by 63 points. You've got Jorge Martin on 193, Marco Bezzecchi minus 7, Digia minus 16, Ayagura minus 25, Marc Marquez minus 40. I wouldn't rule out Raul Fernandez at minus 55 either. He's on a race-winning level bike where he can win, and he's a very good sprinter.
Needs the trough less.
Yes.
The single biggest thing for, like, Raul is going to have a couple weekends in the year where you think, oh, this is the guy that brought Moto2 to heel. That was just phenomenal week in and week out. And then he'll have a weekend where he's like eighth with no real explanation. He's got to get the troughs up.
Yeah, if he can, he needs to get the floor up because the ceiling is there. Like, he can win. He's one of the sport's best front runners, in my opinion, where if you get him to the front and you keep his nose dry, he can win anything. He's quick enough where he can do that now. Then you've got Acosta, who is somehow still in this fight at minus 60, despite having not scored a Grand Prix point since Balloton. And we'll get to that in a little bit as to why as well. And then Pecco Bagnaia at minus 63. There are all reasons as to why these dudes can all win the title. Even Acosta, who on his good days can challenge for wins.
He's never going to be allowed to win a race, Trey. It's never happening.
Allegedly. We'll see. It's a fascinating championship picture right now where I can't remember the last time at an MotoGP championship, pretty much at halfway through, because it's exactly halfway after Germany, round 11 of 22, where we've got eight guys in the fight, realistically. I don't, 63 is a little steep. But
name seasons that's ever happened.
We didn't, because we were spoiled for so long in MotoGP. We had an era where only four dudes could win a race, and it was the guys in blue or the guys in orange.
Yeah, well, there was only a couple years in there where, like Ducati were fighting, like first year of the 800s back in 07. And even that was only really, I mean, Casey Stoner ripping wins out of the bike, because it was an engine and him and not much else.
It was really 2 years of prime Stoner competitiveness on a Ducati, 07 and 08. Yeah. 16 out of, I want to say, is 22 wins in, or 23 wins in Ducati for in those first two seasons. And beyond that, there wasn't any other contenders.
And even then, like, Honda weren't that competitive because it was Ducati and Yamaha that really nailed that.
Yeah. Honda weren't great until the final year we had prototypes.
Yeah.
Stoner won in 2011, and then Pedrosa was right up there in 2012. But he blew it, to be fair, kind of. He was also taken out by Hector Barber in Aragon that year. That was a rough
one.
Still mad about it. Like, yeah, that was the Pedrosa year. People say it's 2006. No, it's 2012. That's the Pedrosa year. That was the one where he got as close as he ever got. It was, for a good while, the highest scoring championship runner-up season in MotoGP history. I think until the first year of the sprint format in 2023,
we had to change the format in order for that to be beat.
332 points in 18 rounds was not good enough to win a championship back then. Scary. But we've not had a championship campaign where three different manufacturers are in the fight. From what? Five different teams? Trackhouse, Aprilia, the factory Ducatis, Digia, the KTM factory team. Like, there's five teams in this. That's nearly half the grid have got at least one contender. It's crazy what we're looking at right now. Like, I'm going into a race weekend not knowing who's going to win, and that's fascinating right now. I love it. it's as good as it's ever been. Silly season. We're now finally getting official announcements as to what people are going where. We saw it a little bit in our last episode that Mark Marquez was confirmed for 2 more years at the Factory Ducati team. A day later, we got the confirmation via an elaborate game of Guess Who that Pedro Acosta, in silhouette form, is going to the Factory Ducati team. The day after that, we got the announcement that Pecco Bagnaia was going to Aprilia. I like with the Aprilia logo turning it all green, white, and red and putting the Go Free logo. Again, have you noticed that the teams can't actually use pictures of the riders here because they're licensed in other levers? So it's like that teams are having silhouettes. To get creative.
Silhouettes.
Silhouettes because we got the other one.
Name that GP rider.
We're getting silhouettes because as well, today, it's like time of recording on Wednesday, July 1st, the Factory Yamaha team finally announced that Jorge Martin and Ayagura will be their riders for next year. They're replacing Fabio Quartararo and Alex Rins. End of an era for Yamaha that Fabio Quartararo, who 11 Grand Prix wins of the team, I think something like 20 pole positions, and of course the 2021
buying Savant early on.
Yeah, and of course as well the 2021 World Championship. After eight
really
seasons.
Could have, should have been the 2020 championship. Could have, should have been the 2022 world championship.
There is definitely an alternate universe somewhere where Fabio is a triple world champ and he three-peats, and we're having a very different conversation about him.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we live in the one where Yamaha completely failed to adapt to ride height devices and aerodynamics and the effective end of the inline four is a valid engine configuration.
Mm.
Yamaha is going to feel really weird next year. The vibes are weird. The vibes are weird now. They're going to be like 10 times more weird next year.
It's going to be... I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Yamaha to get this right. I mean, we said it before. How funny would it be if Jorge Martin won the world title, which he's got every chance of being able to do this year, and takes the number one plate to another manufacturer for the second time in 3 years? You could argue Yamaha's now got two bullets in that chamber with Ayagura, where there is a decent probability, certainly a percentage chance, that the number one plate's on a Yamaha next year.
Well, good luck to them. There's a lot to say about that.
Because they've not been able to develop out of a paper bag since 2022.
They haven't been able to develop out of a paper bag since we went to Spec Electronics, Dre. Let's be real. Like,
it's not
those last couple of years, of Rossi and Vinales, they were spinning their wheels then.
Literally.
They haven't really stopped, literally and figuratively. And this is like the last dying embers of like the Valentino Rossi Lynn Jarvis Yamaha will be excised from this team going into next year's regulations.
Well, Lynn Jarvis left at the end of last year.
Yeah. Like that, these are the last vestiges of his time really running this team.
And Lynn Jarvis, for those who don't know, did 26 years at Yamaha.
Oh, yeah, I quite literally do not know a world without Lynn Jarvis running Yamaha until now.
Arguably the greatest team boss in MotoGP history.
Definitely up there. They better get that something out of that bike next year. So they won't be able to use the excuse of riders, that's for damn sure. Not like they can now.
Now
at least
now,
one of them.
Looking at it, I don't think it's a winning argument. But you could make a case it's the strongest ride lineup in MotoGP next year.
I wouldn't agree with you. I would let you speak, and then I would go, yeah, but Marc Marquez and Pedro Acosta. Zero-time race winner Pedro Acosta still, in defiance of God and man.
Yeah, like, Acosta is somehow the weak spot at Ducati here, because Jorge
what
Martin...
What do you mean?
Because it's weird, because Jorge Martin has at least won a world title, a customer-based world championship. and Ogura's in the thick of a title battle right now himself as a race winner. Like, it's weird in that it's
a little bit better equipment.
Yamaha are going to fall into, because if we believe what the stories say, and I don't think there's any reason to disbelieve what we know, Yamaha's going to have a four-rider fleet of Jorge Martin, Ayagura, Toprak Razgatioglu, and Ezan Guevara.
That is a death lineup by any other name.
It's a hell of a lineup.
Like, raw talent for days. Toprak, low-key, was excellent this weekend until he went out of the race.
Yeah, had rear chatter problems, was running, I want to say, in 10th place when his bike became unrideable because of the amount of rear chatter that he was getting, just bouncing.
You put that man on the Pirellis next year, and oh, mama.
I'm looking forward to that. I mean, you've got a world champion in Jorge Martin, a world championship contender and former Moto2 champion in Ayagura. You've got arguably the greatest world superbike racer of all time in Toprak Razgatioglu, certainly in the top two or three, no matter how you slice it. And Ezan Guevara, who I want to say is top three in the Moto2 World Championship right now, on a Bosca Scorro, which I think is the weakest chassis in Moto2 right now.
It's pretty good.
It's a damn good lineup.
And also, the problem is with all of this.
And Ezan was a Moto3 World Champion, was worth mentioning as well. He was a dominant Moto3 champ as well. People forget about that.
That boy Nice. They have a total lineup of that boy Nice across all four rider seats. Do any of them know how to develop a motorcycle?
As far as we were aware, no. And that might be a problem.
Because Toprak is like, oh man, the production-based BMW sucks. Mm. And they just rode the front of the thing into the ground and won a championship anyway.
So yeah, motorcycle development, not their strongest suit, safe to say.
We just don't know. We don't have any evidence of the contrary thus far.
Yeah. Also, I've got to ask, what do you make of Pekka Bagnaia Aprilia?
Troubled home for troubled Italians. I have more confidence in Pecco right now than I would have had, let's say, 4 months ago. He does look like he's got his head screwed on a little bit more straight. It's just, we don't know what he's going to be off of a Ducati. He's only ever ridden this modern iteration of the Desmo.
Yeah, that's the thing is, well, this is a long-term project. This was a four-year extension from Aprilia. This is a massive commitment.
They're with him for the long haul.
The rest of the decade, essentially. Yeah. That Pecco is going to be there for his age 33 season. Like, you forget that Pecco's only 28. Oh, and by the way, became a dad this weekend. Congratulations to him as well. But apparently the baby Papa came Pecco. Early. So, sadly, unfortunately, there was details and murmurs that leaked out early, which didn't go over well with a lot of the press. But thankfully, baby arrived early, but thankfully safe. Big congrats to Pecco and the family on that one, because that's awesome. You're always going to love anyone becoming a dad for the first time, and very glad the baby came out healthy. If he gets this right, talk about falling up. And to be fair, it was probably harsh he lost his job at Ducati in the first place, because I think that Pecco Bagnaia would have been a Ducati lifer if the option was there. He talked about it in his leaving statement. He loved that team. He loved being there. 8 years, Ducati's all-time most successful rider, 2 world titles, 31 victories in red. 8 more than Casey, 19 more than Marc Marquez so far, for what it's worth. Like, you forget he's a 31-time race winner. Like, that's like,
I really don't, actually.
Only 7 dudes have more Grand Prix wins than him. Ever. He has the same amount as Danny Pedrosa and the same amount as Eddie Lawson.
Well, the problem ultimately comes down to, well,
what have you done for us lately?
Mark appeared in that team and punched his head off first time of asking. Smooth off in the Waffle House under the eclipse.
Listen, Pecco, it's not you. It's him. You're not the first person he's done that to, okay?
Just to everybody.
Unfortunately, you're dealing... Like, unfortunately, like... Statistically... as he shows off the Mark the Magnificent book. Statistically, like... Pecco Bagnaia is a first ballot Hall of Famer, literally by MotoGP's new Hall of Fame definition. He's got more than 25 Grand Prix wins, and he's won multiple world championships. He retires tomorrow. He's an immediate Hall of Famer in MotoGP terminology. It's just you're dealing with the greatest of all time.
Yes, you're dealing with the guy who breaks everything, including himself, in the pursuit of victory.
You are the Jaguar XJ220 as the McLaren F1 drives past you. There's no shame in that. You're still great. You're just not him.
It's okay. Even Michael Schumacher loved the EB110.
Someone had to.
I love the EB110. He had it in bright yellow.
Bold.
Very bold. And then it was never seen again after 1995 because thanks to some other Italians. Yeah, Pecco is very frustrating to evaluate beyond the raw statistics because, as far as eye test, the man is all over the place. The speed, yeah, never in question. Decision making and mistake ability.
There's been many a moment there where when it goes wrong with Pecco, it tends to go very wrong.
And the unfortunate thing is, that's exactly what happened last year. It started okay, but in the pursuit of trying to find something to beat Mark, he just got lost.
And I suspect the politics of it all was what ultimately had their 8-year relationship come to an end, because like I said, Pecco openly said it in his leaving statement. He more or less implied that there were multiple arguments and not seeing eye to eye with the team in that camp. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Cameron, wasn't that the way that Andrea Dovizioso, another one of Ducati's greatest riders, ultimately ended up leaving that team?
Didn't share a word with Gigi Delegna for, what, 3 years?
The last three seasons he was there. I think 2020 was his last season with him. They were not on speaking terms.
And the ironic thing is, Davi was right the whole time. They made the bike turn and it immediately started running the field over.
Yeah. When you're one of the greatest of the modern age, and Andrea Dovizioso, who's won 15 Grand Prix on your motorcycle, the third most of anybody ever, you should probably listen to that man when he tells you something. One of the most intelligent riders I've ever seen in MotoGP.
So what you're saying is add 15 more horsepower.
Yeah, that'll make it so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. If Pecco gets it right, he's going to be an immediate title contender. The speed will come naturally. Like, if he gets it right, and from what I've always been told, the Aprilia is apparently quite easy to ride. It's quite user-friendly in that regard. If Pecco gets this right, he's going to be stupid fast. And I think that's why they gave him the 4-year deal, because I think he wanted the long-term commitment. If they get this right, it's going to be potent. Because Pecco on raw speed is a better talent than Marco Bezzecchi is. No disrespect to Marco.
All day. I would also say Pecco needs to keep the bike upright. That's got to be objective number one. Because he's very rarely lost points from being too slow.
No.
It's usually from tucking the front.
Go on.
That Moto2 finish.
I'd go as far as to say the entire race was...
Moto2 race. That Moto2 everything.
That... It's going to take... I mean, I'm now going to have to literally unscoop my brain out of my head with a spork to figure out whether I give the Indy 500 or this my Race of the Year nomination, because they're the only two 10s I've given all year. In fact, they're the only 10s I've given out in the last 2 years, quite frankly. This was an unbelievable race. I think I want to say six different riders at one point led this race, which in Moto2 is very rare. That Alberto Fernandez, the man that caused that enormous pileup in Austin earlier this year, led this race on merit after qualifying second. That was wild. Danny Holgado led this race for a time being. That was wild. In the end, it boiled down to a three-way dogfight between one man who we know is going to be in Moto2 and probably announced probably tomorrow, actually, if the silly season is anything to go by, because we're waiting for HRC, and we know David Alonso is going to be announced as a HRC rider before this goes out, most likely. And the two Dynavolt Intact riders who we think are probably competing for one MotoGP seat. Manuel Gonzalez, who has led the championship pretty much from start to finish, and Stenerakis, who, for all his foibles, has won two races this season already.
Speed is not the problem.
No. Stenerakis is fast as hell. There's no doubt about that. When he's dialed in, very hard to beat. Gonzalez and Alonso were beating the piss out of each other. Aegis had fresher tires. He saved some over the course of the race. Was bearing down on them at over half a second a lap. The final chicane from the penultimate lap to the end of the race is some of the craziest Moto2 racing you will ever see. Manu Gonzalez is sticking the bike up defensively at every corner. And he's, I think he's right. He's doing this perfectly where Alonso can't figure out a way around him. Gonzalez is putting on a defensive riding clinic at the front of the field. Alonso's trying to figure out. Alonso nearly crashes coming up the hill. Alonso's incredibly fast through Ramshit. Aegis is right there as well. And final chicane. Alonso goes around the outside of the final chicane, slams the door in Manu's face, block passes the second half of the chicane, and wins by 0.02 seconds on a photo finish. I was speechless when I watched that finish. I was just like, get this man a MotoGP bike now. Now, I've seen enough.
Absolute cinema.
It's one of the greatest last lap overtakes I've ever seen on two wheels.
It's one of the greatest last lap overtakes I've ever seen on any wheels.
The balls to go around the outs, that doesn't work at Assen.
Like, it's what else do you call it?
The size
massive
of,
nuts.
The size of his brass bollocks to be able to go around the outs. He outbreaks Gonzalez around the outside of the final chicane and gets it stopped directly in front of him. It is inch perfect. Mesmerizing. It's the
greatest. I challenge you.
Oh my God.
And anyone else to find a better pass this year. Golden Melon front runner at the summit.
And we've had some incredible overtakes this year in motorsport. That, for me, is the very top. That's the greatest Moto2 overtake I have ever seen. Bar none.
It's one of the great ones I've ever seen on a motorcycle, period.
The thing is, right, it's not just the thought process to think, I know Manu is going to block here. I've got to try and outbreak him around the outside. The thought process to even think of that, let alone the execution, which is perfect. Oh, it's exquisite bike riding. It is bike riding at the very highest level. It's off the scale brilliant. Like, David Alonso is a genius, and I've been saying this for a good year and a half about David Alonso. That man had 14 wins in Moto3 in a single season. We knew 2 years ago that this kid is special, and to borrow the nickname, he really is magic. That was one of the greatest last lap overtakes I've ever seen in motorsport. Absolutely wonderful. If you have not seen it, The whole race is worth watching, but if you can't find it via legal or illegal means, just watch the final lap and a half. It is bike racing at the very best, and I tip my cap to all three men because they all contributed towards an out of 10 finish to what was already a 10 out of 10 race.
I would extend that are you fucking kidding me to the whole race. It was that good. If you haven't watched it, find it. If you can't find it, find someone else who knows where to find it.
Off the scale. Unbelievable. The best race I've watched in, for sheer action, the best race I've watched in 2026. The Indy 500 told a story, and it told a great story, and that's what makes it so great. And of course, incredible finish there as well with Rosenquist and David Malukas at the line. The whole race was incredible in Moto2, and just the final lap and a half is as good as bike racing gets. It's up there for me with Tommy Hill and John Hopkins in BSB in 2011 for quite possibly the greatest final lap in biking history. It's up, it's right up there. Unbelievable. I'm glad I can end one of these shows on a genuinely really positive note because, yeah, that's motorsport at its very best, quite frankly. That's why we love doing shit like this. So we can talk about moments like that. Knocking futs. My God. MotoGP is back next weekend at the German Grand Prix at the Saxon Ring. Marquez Land, anyone? That's going to be a fun one.
One of a few.
We'll check that out that time in a week and a half's time. We'll be back next week for Formula One's British Grand Prix. And IndyCar is back at Mid-Ohio this weekend. Dear Alex, don't blow it with four laps to go this time. Just throwing that one out there.
Just don't AI hallucinate the entry to the turn. He'll be fine.
Exactly. He'll get it in one. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Callum Buckley. Thank you very much for watching and listening. And we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara. Playoff P. Paul George is a Boston Celtic. He's just left the room. That's the greatest outro ever. Oh, that's glorious.